yourselves for Ethan and Aaron's Confessions of a Movie Snob, the ongoing discussion of
favorite movies from 1990 to 2000.
I don't know why that, that amuses me every time I hear it. Well, ladies and gentlemen.
I think you're having too much fun with the text-to-speech synthesizer.
I think I am. But
have you started having conversations with Rachel just using that?
That's a good idea. Hey, I did try to get the dog to come to me, but it wouldn't work. But, hey, guess what? We're making a podcast.
We are making a podcast.
So, ladies and gentlemen, trees and multiforms, welcome to the podcast. This time, why don't we say it smells like podcast. Yes, it does.
It's beginning to smell a lot like podcast.
It's beginning to smell a lot like podcast and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it'll be great. It'll be great. But what we are doing this week is something that's kind of a... it's kind of a reaction to last week because I had an awful lot of fun doing the show from last week. And we did favorite movies from 2000 to 2010. And I've actually got nothing but good responses from people. And people don't really reach out to me about the show that often, but I've had quite a few, and they really seem to like what we did there. So we're going to continue. Go ahead.
It's because you're standoffish and people hate you.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, that's the way that it is, but I'm used to it.
That's fine. They don't reach out to me. But, you know.
Yeah, well, they reached out.
I guess they did reach out to me. Not accessible.
Yeah, bad man. But what we are going to do tonight is going to be just continuing that series, and we're going to work our way down. We've actually decided that we're going to commit to this, or we're going to keep at this until we are down to 1900. We want to cover 100 years of film. This is going to rock. So, but that means tonight we are going to be covering the 1990s, an interesting decade for sure when it comes to film, but it's going to be pretty awesome. It's going to be pretty awesome.
Honestly, I think... a lot better movies came out in the 90s than have come out in the aughts. At least that's sort of the what I was getting from looking through the movies that came out.
Yeah, there's some damn good ones. There's some damn good ones. But before we talk about any of that, we do have a little bit of news to talk about. So with that being said,
Geekly Happenings, news that's relevant to us geeks,
featuring Aaron's reactions
and. That was probably so loud, but it's okay. By the way, hi, Ustream. Talking to you. You're looking at my bald ass, but that's just the way that's going to work. We did have a little bit of news this week. I don't know how react. I haven't really talked to Ethan about it at all, so I might be just putting in my two cents about a bunch of stuff. So we'll see what happens. I think probably the most relevant thing that happened this week, at least relevant to us and the listeners, was the release of the Iron Man 3 trailer. Did you see this, Ethan?
I haven't had a chance to see it yet, no.
Okay, this is a time when I am, I'm kind of worried about it, Ethan. What was my shortened down version of my Iron Man 2 review?
That it looked like that it was Iron Man 2?
It was Iron Man 2. It looked like more from the first. This one's looking pretty dark. And I mean like Dark Knight dark. So it just might have been the tone of the trailer. And we'll just have to see what happens. Obviously, there's some fantastic visuals in there. You see see a bunch of stuff. You see a real brief shot of Ben Kingsley as the Mandarin. So that's pretty slick. The most noteworthy thing that I would say about it is Ben Kingsley has like a little monologue where he's talking. And he is doing some odd stuff with his voice. I was trying to explain it to somebody, and I explained it like a more articulate-sounding version of Golden Era, you know, Native American. You know, like How White Man. But instead of How White Man, just like that, I don't know, that timbre and then that... Now, I don't know, just like that dot, 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 you know, like, you know, very measured voice. It's kind of strange, but we'll have to see what happens with that. It'll be cool. The other one, and this is something I don't know if you've seen, if you haven't seen Iron Man 3, you probably haven't seen this, but they also is now a Red Band trailer out for the Evil Dead remake. Is this something you've seen?
No, I have not.
Now, me personally, I'm not particularly interested. Because it looks like a horror movie to me. It looks like a well-made horror movie, but it doesn't particularly look like one that's going to, you know, grab my attention. It doesn't look to be in the same spirit of the first one. So, I mean, obviously not. And I was talking to a buddy on Facebook, and, you know, he specifically singled me out and said, what do you think of this, Aaron? And I said, well, you know what, if we're going to make, you know, if we're going to remake Evil Dead, where I'm going to go with the original Evil Dead remake, you know, Evil Dead 2. And then him and I went back and forth on whether or not that was an actual remake of Evil Dead 2, and I won. So that's just, yeah, so a couple of trailers there. Now I don't know his name, and I can't. And I'm on it. And do you remember this the gentleman's name from Last of the Mohicans who died?
Unfortunately, I don't.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah, but a gentleman from Last of the Mohicans yes. passed away the other day. I don't know why. I don't know how. I don't know why. But yeah, yeah. He died. It sucks. And I think I'm going to be making an edit here, but that's okay. That's okay.
That's
but I think
fine.
That's going to bring us to an end.
Russell
of,
Means.
There we go, Russell Means. And you pointed out he also played Sphinx in Mystery Men.
Let me double check on that.
Well, he may not have. I don't remember because I don't really know this guy, and I've only seen Last of the Mohicans once, twice, something like that. Not a whole lot.
No, he did not play that guy in in. He did not play the Sphinx in.
He did not
in a Mystery Man. He did not. No.
Oh, that's just us being racist. So let's bring an end to this disastrous geekly happenings and move on into our main topic discussion, where we are going to be talking about the films of the 1990s, pretty much 1990 through, 2000 or the end of 1999, you know, however you want to look at it. Okay, looking at this list, there's something that jumped out at me right away when I was when I started looking at this list. First off, it was so easy to make, kind of. I mean, there's a lot of really good movies that came out in this time period.
Oh yeah.
But something that I think that we are going to notice more and more and more as time goes by, as we work our way down through the decades. Look at the list that we did last week. You know, with 2000 through 2010, you know, we were, you know, at least I was talking about stuff like, you know, my atheism, like, you know, spurned feelings for my divorce, you know, Nazi apology, stuff like that, all kinds of things like that. And, you know, just like really adult stuff. Because that's kind of like, you know, when those movies came out, you know, when we were in between the ages of 20 and 30, you know, practically. Looking at this list, these movies came out from the times between when we were 10 and 20. So to me, there's definitely more of an innocent feeling to my list than there was this last time. I don't know how deep social issues we're going to get into, but we might actually touch on our childhoods a little bit. What do you think about this list, Ethan? You were saying something before.
Yeah, I definitely, when I was going back making this list, I noticed that there were when I was making the list for the aughts, I noticed there were actually a couple of years where really not a lot came out that I was like, you know, that was really good. There was something like, oh, it was okay, that was entertaining. Whereas in the 90s, with the exception of one year, and you probably know which year it is, there's really only like every year that there was at least three or four movies that came out that were just really good. And yes, it was also the decade of the Hollywood sequel. You know, I mean the continuation where you had Predator 2 and Alien 3 and all these continuations of franchises that had started in the 80s, and it was definitely the decade of the sequel.
It was.
Now, I don't think any of those are going to end up on my list, mind you, but it definitely was a very different sort of a forebearer to the 2000s and sort of what's going on now is we're just getting lots of sequels again, you know?
Yeah. I look at this and there's a bunch of stuff that jumps out of the 90s. I'll touch on it just a little bit. First off, where to start? Okay, I think that like one of the more noteworthy things that happened in the 90s was there was this explosion of independent cinema. You know, you had stuff like... Mm-hmm. You know, like all of, Kevin Smith's stuff, Tarantino, Linklater, the Miramax stuff, that was a big thing in the mid-90s. It kind of went away, little bit, but it did happen in the 90s. We talked last week about like the major advances that happened in CGI and the aughts, or the knots as they want to be called. There was that going on here too, but it's almost more fun in the 90s because there was just there's you know, like that innocence of it. It was just starting. It was like the Jurassic Park stuff, you know. Yeah. Like, I mean, it looked incredible in 1993, which is 20 years ago, and we're old. And you know, now it looks good, but not nearly as good as some of the stuff that they're putting out these days. I noticed that there's a bunch of other stuff that I noticed, but I think I'm going to bring that up as we work our way down through our list. I do want to start off our list before we get started with something that I'm not calling it an honorable mention. I'm not calling it anything, but I had it brought up to me that, you know, me being who I am and me being like the big Star Wars prequels defender, why the hell I didn't bring up the Star Wars prequels last week. And I'm going to, you know, spoiler, Phantom Menace, even though it falls in this time period, isn't going to show up on this list either. It's right. Because I think people are misunderstanding me. I have never tried to call those great, great, great films. I'm attacking the hyperbole of calling them amongst the worst movies ever made. That's sure. All that I'm doing. That's all that I'm doing. And it's just like an easy, easy, easy target for me to attack that hyperbole that's just all over the internet. But, you know, yeah, so those aren't showing up here.
Go ahead. Yeah, I completely understand. And the with Star Wars being what it is, you know, it didn't show up on my list either. It's not going to show up on my list tonight. I can tell that right now. But it by no means are those bad movies. They're enjoyable for what they are, you know. But we've been over that about a million times at this point. So
yeah, not showing up, but that's good. That's good. Anything else jump out at you about this? Time period, or you just want to kind of get rolling?
It was definitely a very dynamic shift in tone as far as for movies from the 80s into the 90s, and especially sort of mid 90s on is sort of you had this very interesting dynamic of movies that came out that were really, 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 really different than what you had seen the decade before. And I think it's going to be interesting to see where we end up as we keep going back and seeing what it was, and sort of it's an interesting way to sort of compare us to see, well, in the 2000s, you know, this is what we got. In the 1990s, we got a lot more we did get a lot more darker, sort of more intellectual and sort of even independent movies that really shaped and really shaped the way they made movies for the next 20 years, obviously. So, and that's, I think that's going to be an interesting trip as we keep going back.
Yeah, that's what I keep noticing too. Okay, well, I'm getting kind of excited. I want to see what you have to say about this. So, Ethan, what's your number six favorite movie from the 1990s?
All right, my number six has already been mentioned. It's the 1993 Jurassic Park.
Okay.
This is a you know, say what you will about it, you know, it's Spielberg doing what he does, but what Spielberg does is generally make good movies. And with Jurassic Park, you know, it has been 20 years, good Lord. But you know, you go back and you look at this movie, not only was it a huge a good fun movie, it was a huge technical achievement when it came out. I mean, the dinosaur effects were just absolutely amazing. You know, it was back when Industrial Light and Magic was the gemstone, was the pinnacle of what you could get to for effects and for your digital effects in movies.
Mm.
And, you know, obviously now that's changed, where you have a lot of different places that are really, really good at other things. But, you know, this is the first time I remember really getting to know and being told about Industrial Light and Magic and really understanding what they did and, you know, being aware of, wow, they did all that. That is really amazing. And it was sort of like how you say, what you said in 89 when Batman came out, that there was that bat symbol was everywhere. Well, this is movies the same way. When this movie came out, that Jurassic Park logo was everywhere.
It was.
You could not walk 4-5 feet during the summertime in 1993 without seeing the Jurassic Park symbol somewhere. And because it was just everywhere, and this was just an insane movie. I remember seeing it in theaters, and I saw it I think I saw it about 6 times when it came out. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, I saw it 8 times because I had seen Batman 6 times.
Right.
And this had the record. I think it probably still has the record for the most number of times I've seen a movie in theaters.
Uh-huh.
And it still holds up today. I mean, it is still a die-in-the-wool Steven Spielberg movie. You know, it's got those aspects of Jaws and all that great stuff in it. And it's very obvious that this is a Spielberg, you know, a Spielberg trope.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to look back 20 years now and see that it is that it has this following. You know, they're still talking about doing a 4th movie, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
They haven't ever duplicated what they did with the first one by any means, but it's still definitely a turning point in digital effects and the turning point in how movies were made. And you know, without this, you know, we wouldn't get those big, huge, digital laden summer blockbusters. You know, it's the movies like this that brought us Independence Day and the Star or the not the Star Wars movies, but the Transformers movies and those types of things. So that's why it ended up at number 6 on my list.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of expected that one to show up on your list because I know how fond you are of it. And you know, I like it too. I mean, it's a fun movie to watch, but it's something that's funny that kind of happened to me relatively recently is I was listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson's podcast Star Talk Radio, and they had an episode where they talked about science in movies, which is something that we are going to have coming up as well at some point. And they talked about this movie and they pointed out every single thing that was wrong with it. And I'm like, son of a bitch, they're fucking right. And so it's harder for me to watch now, but you know, you get past all that and it's a movie about people running away from dinosaurs, which, you know, hey, that's kind of fun too. But you know, it's a movie that, it was gigantic when it came out. It changed an awful lot of things in the world of cinema. But when it, you know, when it comes down to it, it's just kind of a fun movie. So, okay, good job. Good job for your number 6. I knew that was going to be showing up on your list. As something else, you know, speaking of knowing stuff that's going to show up on your list, you and I do kind of have like an unspoken, well, I don't think it's unspoken anymore. We said it on the show before, but we have an unspoken we have an unspoken truce between the two of us that, like, you know, if we're going to talk Tarantino, you kind of leave it up to me. Or if we're going to talk Alien or something like that, I leave it up to you. One of those movies on that, you know, truce list is a movie that I'm going to take back from you, motherfucker. I took the 1992 Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven. I'm taking that back from you because I've always liked that movie. You like to point out that you used to hate it when you were younger. I've always loved this movie. I saw it in the theater with my dad, so that might have made it mean a little bit more something to me. But it's such a great, great Western. It's easily the best, most recent Western that came out. You have, you know, just absolutely dynamically awesome performances by Clint fucking Eastwood, by Morgan fucking Freeman, by Gene Hackman. Richard Harris is in one of his final roles in that movie. It's just, I think, I don't know who said it. It wasn't me who said it, but I heard somebody call it a funeral dirge for the Western, and that's exactly what it was, because these were all those characters from the Sergio Leone, the John Ford, the Clint Eastwood movies, you know, growing up, getting old, and, you know, having to deal with the consequences of their actions when they were younger and just shooting shit and fucking bitches in pool rooms and, you know, drinking at the bar. And it was just kind of, it's just kind of fun to see that. And it's an absolutely wonderful, fantastic movie. I love this movie. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I put it on my number 6 because you're absolutely right that there's a lot of good movies that came out, and I fought to keep this actually my top 6 because I wanted to take it back from you. But I decided to put it at number 6 because I do absolutely adore this movie. So that's why I chose it.
Cool. Well, it's my number 3. Okay. You know, you knew it was going to end up on my list somewhere. And you're entirely right. I've talked about it a lot, and it's one of those that, you know, when I first saw it, I didn't like it, and now it's absolutely one of my favorite movies, obviously. Mm-hmm. I love Westerns. This movie is definitely one of those epic. I like to sort of akin it to a Greek myth. It's got these great this great Greek tragedy element to it that really it's just an amazingly written, well acted, well directed piece, and it's one of those seminal movies out there that, you know, they're going to be talking about in film courses for decades. And this is definitely one of those movies that is a sort of a peak of a genre, and that took a genre and entirely just said, you know, we're going to do a Western. We're going to kick it, everything's ass with it. And then whatever comes out after this is just going to be, you know, fodder at this point. So yeah, it easily made my number three.
Very cool. Very cool. Mm-hmm. So at this point, moving on to your number five.
Yeah. Moving down to my number five. This is a movie that, I mean, you talk about taking back Unforgiven. My number five is one I fully expect to show up on your list, but it's Tarantino's Pulp Fiction.
Wow, I thought I didn't know you liked Pulp Fiction.
I love Pulp Fiction.
Oh,
actually.
Okay. I thought you were just kind of like eh about it.
No, I love that movie. I you know, for the longest time it was my favorite Tarantino movie, and then Inglorious Batman. Then you showed me Inglorious Batman.
You just said Inglorious Batman. That yes, would Inglourious be a fucking Batman. Movie.
I would see that movie right
oh, hell
now.
Yeah.
Pulp Inglorious Batman. There we go. Done. Yeah.
Electric
but no, Pulp Fiction is it's one of those movies that stays with you after you see it. And I remember seeing it for the first time at the Cinema Twin, the Dollar Theater mm-hmm. in Lawrence when they had a Dollar Theater. And, you know, it's one of those movies that you see and then right after it or even during it, you feel kind of dirty that you're watching it. You know, you just feel this little grimy. But then afterwards, you just can't get it out of your head. And it's that Tarantino love of cinema that this is early enough in his career that he had this amazing amount of energy. And I think it's fascinating to see where he's gone from Pulp Fiction all the way up until up to Inglourious Basterds. And he has sort of kept that energy going, that love of movies. And, you know, arguably, yes, I mean, there's Reservoir Dogs right before this. Not one of my personal favorites, but this mm-hmm. is the one that really, really, really just hit home for me. And you know, Tarantino amazes me in that he has kept up that high energy level. He's kept up that enthusiasm now for 20 years, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I admire the guy for it. And Pulp Fiction, I think, is one of his crowning achievements. I mean, easily. I mean, it got nominated for several Academy Awards and was such a
won an Academy Award.
Yeah, one for writing. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those movies that just you see and, you know, right after it comes out, you just look back and it's a gem. It's a gem in, you know, it's one of those ripples in movie history that you look back and go, well, Pulp Fiction came out here and that changed how certain movies were made.
Right.
And that was Pulp Fiction, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. Jurassic Park did it, but Pulp Fiction did it, but on a much more, visceral level, you know? So yeah, it's my number five.
Yeah, this movie showed up on my my top six favorite films of all time, if I remember right. Yeah, so if you want to hear me talk about that, just listen to fucking
Confessions. I'll have you know that after we did that show, when we got out of there, I stopped off and actually bought it on DVD.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you watch that trivia track? How fucking cool is that?
Yes. Yes. And since then, it's come out on Blu-ray, and I need to pick that up. But
yeah, I got that. I got that a couple of weeks ago. It's a good one. It's a good one. Okay. My number five.
Yep,
my number five. My number five is one that I've talked about, and I think I've only talked about it tangentially. Seems like it showed up on. Yeah, I definitely. Yeah, I had a line from it in our favorite movie lines one. But the irony of me talking about it is the first rule is you don't fucking talk about it. 1999 Fight Club. This is a movie that I have a lot of confliction about because of the fact that I don't like the people that like it for the most. I mean, I've talked about that a whole bunch. I mean, I just see a lot of people just don't get it. That doesn't change the fact that this is a glorious, glorious movie. I do find it distressing that an awful lot of people discovered Edward Norton watching this movie, because I was very aware of who he was, and that's actually kind of what got my ass in the seat. Brad Pitt wasn't Brad Pitt in 1999. I know that sounds like a dumb thing to say, but it's he wasn't the Brad Pitt that we know now. He wasn't the brave Brad Pitt that would do stuff like Inglourious Basterds, like this. He did do Seven before this, but this is just one of those roles that just really kind of took Brad Pitt out of that, you know, that charming, beefcakey, you know, River Runs Through It, Legends of the Fall guy, and, you know, turned him into this really brave actor that does these movies where, you know, he's got that, he's just got these weird scenes in it. I mean, the dude had a tooth pulled out for this fucking movie.
Yeah.
There's just, and it's a very good, very good script. It's really fun to read. It's one of those movies that's an awful lot of fun to see with people because of the fact that, you know, it has like one of those, you know, notorious twist endings. It's a wonderful movie. I really like it. I wanted to put it on this list because, like I said, I've listened through the podcast a lot lately, and it doesn't sound like I like it because, you know, I do think that some people overreacted to it. They said, oh my God, it's the best thing since Citizen Kane. Matter of fact, fuck Citizen Kane. Give me, you know, I'm like, are you out of your goddamn mind? But
yeah.
When it comes down to it, I really like it a lot. It's a very good movie, and it is like one of those ones that kind of grew with time because it didn't do too well in the theater. It didn't do awfully, but, you know, it didn't do very well. So it's my number, my number five?
Yeah, you're number five. It's a good one. It's a fantastic movie. It didn't quite make my list. And it is one of those movies that you you sort of look back and sort of reflect on it. And it's definitely one of those that you don't watch the same way twice.
Right.
So obviously you watch it the first time, you watch it the second time very differently. But even when you watch it a third time, then a fourth time, then a fifth time, that's way different too.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this great chemistry in that movie, and really all these pieces came together. And I know you also read the book.
Yeah, I did.
And
it's
so
the book. I kind of like the, you know, I mean, I don't like doing the whole, you know, book to movie comparisons because, you know, they're both great. I really preferred the way the book ended to the movie, but, you know, that's neither here nor there because I did really like the movie an awful lot too.
Okay, cool.
So at this point, moving on to your number four.
All righty. Well, my number four is a movie that is just it's one of those movies that has has withstood the test of time and people absolutely love it. It's Shawshank Redemption.
Ah, my number seven.
Yeah, great movie. I mean, and it is one of those, and we've talked about it before as far as the year it came out, you know, that it came out opposite, you know, it came out at a time where there was all these great movies coming out in that year, and you just had this such a pain in the ass type of thing, because you look back on it, and it was an amazing movie, and it was wonderfully directed, wonderfully acted, it had a beautiful story, and unfortunately, it just had the problem of coming out at a time where all these other great movies were also coming out, and you couldn't spread that love around as much as you wanted to.
Right.
And Shawshank is definitely, it's one of those movies that you have those great stories and those great moments, and in this movie you have Morgan fucking Freeman, and it's, you know, and this was the benchmark of going back and saying, you know, why the fuck does he not have an Oscar?
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, it sucked that year that this came out because there's, you know, a bunch of other great performances too, obviously. But I mean, fuck, Cuba Gooding Jr. had an Oscar and his man doesn't. What the fuck, right?
Yeah.
And it's an amazing movie. I remember it's not a movie you sit down and watch lightly, but it's also a movie that, like a lot of other movies that came out in the '90s and at any time that are real heavy. This is also one that you can watch again and again and again and still enjoy. It has a great message to it, and it's just a wonderful film.
Yeah, it is. I put it on my number seven. It is one of those. I mean, you're absolutely right when you're talking about the snubbing at the Oscars. It's one of those movies that, you know, people around, you know, like the poo-pooers of the Oscars, they like to make up those lists about, you know, why the Oscars don't fucking matter. And they'll always put number one reason, because Shawshank Redemption didn't win any goddamn Oscars. And you're kind of like, maybe you're right a little bit. But, you know, it was a really rough year. I mean, you had you know, Fight Club and Pulp Fiction and Quiz Show and Ed Wood and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you had all these great, great movies. But I really like Shawshank Redemption. I mean, it's, like you said, it's Morgan fucking Freeman at his Morgan fucking Freemanist. I mean, you know, he's just, you know, like the picture of dignity and wonderfulness in that movie. It's one of Tim Robbins, you know, pre-Oscar win roles that was, you know, really very excellent. Very well directed, Frank Darabont. I dug it. Picked it from number 7.
Great movie. Great movie. Well, what's your number 4?
My number 4. Your number 6 was Jurassic Park, if I'm remembering correctly.
That is correct.
I see the 1990s as the things I said in the at the beginning of the show, but I also see it as the decade of Spielberg. Obviously, you know, he made Jaws and Raiders of the Lost Ark and, you know, like some of like his better, you know, his bigger successful movies in the, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, but the 1990s was all about Steven Spielberg maturing. So, you know, I had to look at that, and I had to look at, like, some of these, you know, wonderful movies that he made, like Jurassic Park, like fucking Schindler's List, you know, Amistad, and then, you know, my number 4, Saving Private Ryan. That movie tore me apart when I saw it for the first time. I mean, it's the first time I can remember crying in a movie theater. It's a World War II movie that doesn't beat you over the head with Nazis, which is unique, you know? I mean, it was a movie that kind of showed what it was like to be an American back then. It's, you know, even more astounding because of the fact that it's based off of a true story that something along these lines did happen. It's one of those movies that I like throwing in people's face when they like to say that, you know, Tom Hanks sucks. I say, you cannot watch Saving Private Ryan and say Tom Hanks sucks and, you know, have me take you seriously. And then this is also has a fantastic cast. I mean, you have Matt Damon playing the title role, Private Ryan, but then you have like just tons of people, Ted Danson, I can't even remember his name now, the guy that's in jail, Tom Sizemore. You have, Giovanni Ribisi in one of his first roles, Barry Pepper. One of his first, you know,
yeah, Vin Diesel. Even Nathan Fillion.
Yeah. Very young, very baby faced Nathan Fillion. So yeah, this is a movie that really, really affected me. And I do think that Steven Spielberg grew up in the 1990s. So I just had to go and grab his movie that meant the most to me. And that was Saving Private Ryan, 1998.
No, it's a great movie. And you know, speaking about number 7, it's my number 7. You know?
How about that?
It's a great movie. You know, Spielberg comes out and does this. You really hit the nail on the head as he does this World War II movie that doesn't beat you over the head with the fact that it's a World War II movie. Right. You know,
it's about Americans.
No, yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's kind of cool.
But it isn't about Americans.
You know, it's about soldiers. You know, it's about. Yeah. It's about brotherhood. It's about kinship, and it was just kind of refreshing to see, especially in the 90s, because you know you pointed out the whole, you know, sequelization thing that, you know, that started to happen, and then the whole thing with comic books and everything getting over the top and everything. It was really neat to see this wonderfully, just wonderfully unique movie that is actually lost a lot of people over the years. I mean, because of the whole shaky cam thing, a lot of people just dismiss it now. This is one of the first, you know, mainstream movies to really, really take advantage of that and do really good things with it.
Oh, yeah, totally. And it, you know, I remember seeing this movie in theaters and seeing that first, you know, the first half an hour of that movie, you know, the first 20 minutes, half an hour is
gut-wrenching,
that storming the beach scene. And it just, I was speechless seeing that scene, and it was just, you'd never seen it before, and it was just so well done, and you were just absolutely just blown away by it. And it still hurts me today, you know, that this movie didn't win Best Picture, because God damn it, it should have. We know what is Best Picture here, and it was Saving Private Ryan, obviously.
Okay, cool. What's your number 4?
Number three. My number 3 was Unforgiven.
Oh, right. So it's my turn again?
Yep.
Son of a bitch. Keep doing this to me. Okay, my number three is a movie that's, you know, I'm not quite so much getting into reconciliation in this list, but this is a movie that I had to reconcile with myself because I've always liked it. It's a movie that, you know, I've never, you know, said, oh, fuck this movie or anything like that. But it is a movie that just keeps on growing on me no matter how many times I see it. Once again, it's 1998, and it's, but this time it's The Big Lebowski. I had to reconcile the fact with me that, you know, I can say, you know, how much I like the Hudsucker Proxy, or I like O Brother, Where Art Thou, or, you know, any of these wonderful frickin' Coen Brothers movies, but which one makes it into my Blu-ray player the most? It's the fucking Big Lebowski, so I just had to accept the fact that this is my favorite Coen Brothers movie. I just love watching it. You have, I thought it was a very underrated performance by Jeff Bridges. You know, luckily he's got an Oscar now, and this isn't an Oscar kind of movie. I mean, it's wonderful, sure, but it's just not the kind of movie that's going to get you, it's going to get you an Oscar. So he had that going on. You had, you know, just post Roseanne, John Goodman. And so, you know, he's in there calling somebody motherfucker and flashing a gun and, you know, talking about Vietnam and, you know, nihilists and stuff like that. And
he's definitely not King Ralph.
No, not King Ralph, not Dan Connor. I mean, he is Walter fucking Sobchak. You know, you had, like that funny little ongoing joke of Steve Buscemi's character of Donnie. Everyone's constantly telling him to shut the fuck up. Well, that the inside joke there is because Steve Buscemi's played several characters in Coen Brothers movies in the past, and they talked a lot. So they're telling him now to shut the fuck up, even though he's saying nothing. Also, infinitely quotable fucking movie. I mean, this, if we were making a favorite movies line list, you know, today, I probably would, you know, replace "Shut the fuck up, Donnie" with "Fuck it, dude, let's go bowling." You know, that's just kind of stuff that I say now. It's just a movie that I really enjoy watching. There's all kinds of good stuff, you know, happening, and so I just had to reconcile with the fact that, you know, I can, you know, try to be artsy fartsy as much as I want, but The Big Lebowski is my favorite Coen Brothers film, so I had to pick it for my number three.
All right, good to know. Good to know. All right, well, I guess moving on to my number two,
yep,
right? Because that was your number three.
Correct, this is your number two.
Okay, well, my number two is no surprise, should be absolutely no surprise to you that this is on my list. It's L.A. Confidential.
My number 10. That's one I decided to let you have.
You know how much I love this movie.
I do.
And you know, making this list, it was like the first one I wrote down.
Yeah.
You know, it was like this is an amazing movie. I you know, up through 2008, my favorite thing I like to say was it was the best movie in the last 10 years. You know,
yeah.
I mean, this movie is absolutely amazing, and it has just a brilliant story to it. It has great characters. It's beautifully done, and you know, words sort of escape me on how to formulate how wonderful this movie is. And I love crime movies, and I love these sort of neo-noir movies that this movie is. And it just hit it on the head. And I was so ecstatic when I saw this in theaters and just saying, you know, that was absolutely amazing. You know, very few times do you see a movie and you're sitting in the theater and with the credits rolling and you go, that was absolutely, utterly amazing. And it's like you have those movies where it's like, that was cool, that was awesome, you know, I mean, there's that Avengers feeling, but in this one it was absolutely, you know, touched me down to my core. I was like, this movie just hit me just square on, and I loved it. And that's L.A. Confidential. I mean, you have so many great things in this movie, so many great actors, you know, Kevin Spacey, Russell Crowe, Guy Pearce before he went off and did randomly bad movies, and James Cromwell. You know, I mean, just this movie, just wow. You know, and it obviously had to make it onto my list.
Yeah, and it kind of had to make it onto my list too. I do really like this movie. You know, it's obviously a really fun, you know, cop and crime caper. You know, it's in one of those periods of movies that's just fucking butter to me. You know, I love the Fedora times. I mean, it's not, you know, it's like, John Rogers said on our noir show. I mean, it's like a wax museum of noir, and it's just an awful mm-hmm. lot of fun to watch. So yeah, that's my number 10. It's a good one.
It's a great movie. I mean, obviously. What's your your number two now?
My number two, that whole little thingy bobber I said leading into our list about the innocence of that of this list, you know, becoming apparent because, you know, we were younger when these movies came out, so they're going to touch our hearts a little bit differently than you know, movies that we saw as adults, you know, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. This is one that always surprises. I don't quite get it, but it always surprises people that I like it as much as I do. I think it made my top six films list, but 1994, The Lion King. I mm-hmm. adore that fucking movie. The 1990s, another thing that happened in there, it's what happened with the renaissance of Disney. You know, this mm-hmm. wonderful thing going on with the resurgence of Disney, you know, coming back into prominence, making these wonderful movies. I think it started in, what, 89 or whenever Beauty and the Beast came out, and they kind of said it ended with Tarzan because that one didn't do too well. A lot of people our age tend to prefer Aladdin. It's not me. The Lion King is a movie that, you know, I absolutely loved. Let's talk about the music a little bit. You had Howard Ashman and Elton John, you know, collaborating, making, you know, some of like the most, you know, recognizable music from an era. I mean, everybody was running around singing Hakuna Matata. You had that wonderful thing. The music at the beginning of the Circle of Life, and that scene at the beginning where they're presenting Simba to the kingdom for the very first time, and that still fucking gives me chills when I see it, and I don't really know why. I saw this movie in 3D. We took the kid to see it, but I'm like, you know, fuck the kid. You know, this was all about me, and just the 3D was breathtaking. I owned it on Blu-ray. I actually ended up buying the special edition 3D in case I ever do one day get a 3D Blu-ray player. And it's also funny because a lot of people don't really realize, you know, that movie snob, you know, the guy that, you know, loves his Charlie Chaplin and blah, blah, blah. But I'm actually kind of a huge, huge, huge Disney fan. I really, 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 really love Disney, and I've never been to any of the parks. Sue me. I've always wanted to. I just never been. I do want to go. I want to go really bad. But I really love Disney, and I really liked this renaissance. I mean, there's just mm-hmm. so much magic in all these movies, and I think the absolutely most magical and the one that means the most to me is The Lion King. Picked it for my number two, and I couldn't put it any lower than that. It was just absolutely amazing.
You know, and if my list went to an 11. It would go. 11 would be Lion King. It was on my list for a very, very long time until I just barely pushed it off. I love The Lion King. It is my favorite Disney movie. And so I'm right there with you. It's a fantastic movie. I mean, I remember, but you're right. Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King. You know, they had a line of them. And arguably, I said I think that their sort of dynasty or their streak ended with Pocahontas, honestly. But
yeah, but it was, yeah, you're right, but it died with Tarzan.
Yeah,
we gave them three movies because we got so much, you know, we got so much wonderful magic for mm-hmm. a good, you know, 6-7 years there. But you're right, but the Lion King is just, you know, top of the
Lion King was the peak. I mean, and not to say that, you know, Beauty and the Beast or The Little Mermaid or any of those were bad movies or by any means, but the Lion King, it just was the pinnacle for them, and I think it has, that movie has so much going on in it that even as kids you couldn't see everything.
Well, I mean,
that was
it was 94, summer of 94, so I would have been 13, 14 when this came out, so I wasn't exactly a kid, but you know, it's still, you know, it's just got into my heart, and it's never gone away. It won't.
we're in our 30s now, and we watch it, and there's stuff going on in that movie that we're just seeing now. We just realize is going on now. That's how good that movie was, you know?
And also look at, you know, maybe we're going to go on about this one a little bit long, but it deserves it. Look at the villain of Scar. I mean, how out of, you know, just how out of an extraordinary villain is he? I mean, he's smaller. He's, you know, less strong. He's not as physically imposing, but he's Machiavellian. He's evil. You know, he is a wonderful fucking villain. And, you know, when you think of archetypes, a lot of people think of fucking Disney. You know, your mustache twirling villain and your larger than life stuff. And absolutely not in this case. Scar was such a unique and awesome villain. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Great movie.
Okay.
So I guess we're my number one.
Yes, sir.
There's
no way for you to stretch it and make District 9 your number one of the fucking 90s.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just revise it then.
What is it, man?
All right.
Alien Resurrection.
What's that?
Alien Resurrection.
Yes, it's Alien Resurrection. No, it's not Alien Resurrection. I would rather gouge out my eyes with rusty hot pokers. The movie that just pretty much to me embodies the 90s, and I mentioned sequels before. This one is the sequel of all sequels. It's Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Did not make my list because I outgrew it. I had it on my list, dude. And then I started looking at all these movies, and I realized that I'm never going to go back to being that 12-year-old kid. I do like this movie a lot, but I outgrew a need for it. I'm sorry. It's wonderful. I mean, it was so important. It was like, you know, the biggest movie of the summer and all that stuff. But it didn't make my list, and I thought about it, but I just realized that, I don't know. Go ahead, though.
It's a great movie. You know, biggest movie of the summer. It came out, and it was this whole just dynamic movie that just absolutely set the standard for sequels to basically saying, okay, you want to do a sequel, it has to be this good. If it's not this good, get out of town. You know, and that's how this movie came out. And just, you know, pretty much just took this whole level of special effects and level of storytelling to new pastures. And Terminator 2 to me embodies what the 1990s basically hit with what they wanted to do. And because you had all these sequels coming out and all this other stuff, but everyone, you know, really sequel wise, everyone was trying to basically do Terminator 2 after that.
Yeah.
And this movie was absolutely huge. This, you couldn't go, it wasn't this merchandising, you know, this crazy merchandising thing like, say, Jurassic Park was. This movie was still this just absolutely, everyone was like, have you seen Terminator 2? Have you seen Terminator 2? And it's one of those few sequels people rate above the original, you know? And so to me, you know, when I'm trying to say this is the movie to me that embodies the 1990s, it had to be Terminator 2 for me. So it's my number one.
I get it. I mean, I get it, and I knew it was going to be your number one, honestly. I didn't put it on my what I said is true, and I'm not trying to say it's a bad movie, but every one of these movies that I've spoken about means more to me than Terminator 2. And actually, I'm going to use that as a segue to move into my number one, because, first off, I'm just going to, I don't like, burying the lead is stupid. It's fucking Pulp Fiction. Of course it's Pulp Fiction. Now, on this show, often I talk about important movie-going experiences in my lifetime. Pulp Fiction is the reason why I say that. Pulp Fiction is the reason why 19 years later, I'm sitting in a garage doing a podcast talking about movies. It's the movie that made me see movies the way that I do now. And obviously I've seen, you know, a lot since then, so that shaped me. But this is the one. I walked into a movie theater, and no offense, Ethan, I walked into a movie theater thinking that Terminator 2 was the greatest movie ever fucking made. And I walked out, showed what cinema could be. This movie, it was, I, 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 I talk so much, but I'm almost at a loss for words for what it did to me. There's just so much going on in this movie that it's absolutely mind-blowing. First off, something that a lot of people try, I don't know if they try to overlook it or they don't see it, but they don't understand it's a movie about a bunch of losers. They're fucking losers. I mean, think about it. You have John Travolta, who's overweight, hair too long, too old to be doing the things that that he's doing, and ends up getting killed by Bruce Willis. You have that going on. You have the whole thing going on with Jules, where he goes through his change of heart after the shooting in the apartment, and he actually comes to a very illogical solution because some fucking bullets missed him. So that's pretty fucking stupid. So you're dealing with a bunch of low-life fucking losers in this movie, but you think they're the coolest fucking people in the world just because of the way that they're framed, the way that they're presented to us. I think I said it on our top six movie list when I was watching the trivia track on this for the very first time. I was flabbergasted to find out that this is a movie that I've probably seen this movie conservatively 100 times in my life, okay? Conservatively, probably more. I watch this movie a lot. And I learned stuff about this from that trivia track. You said that, it's fun to see, Tarantino, he comes from, here to, where he went with Inglourious Basterds. I see somebody, at the absolute peak of, the top of his game, probably, one of, the best filmmakers, ever. And you want to talk about a rush for people trying to catch up? This is the movie why we had that independence boom. Because apparently there is talent out there, like Tarantino, that isn't attached to a big-ass studio. So they were out there trying to find it. The whole thing with the, one of the things that, just a small thing about just the level of detail in this movie is I always loved the thing about how, when What's-His-Face jumps down and shoots at them, the bullet hole's already in the wall. So, you have that little level of detail just trying to throw you off, so you have some questions about Jules's decision. The whole thing with, any of you fucking pricks move on, I'll execute every last one of you, like that one, and then it's different when we get back to that scene at the end, just to show, the differences in perspectives and what people are seeing and what people are hearing. I mean, this is a incredible fucking movie, and I'm in awe of it. I don't know how to make movies, and this one makes me hang up my hat and say there's no fucking way I could make a movie this good. I adore this movie. You said Terminator 2 is the movie in the 90s. To me, it's Pulp Fiction all the way. It's such a fantastic movie, so I picked it for my number one.
Well, I think we're definitely in two different camps on that.
We are.
I do love Pulp Fiction.
I know you do, and great, I like Terminator 2 also.
Mm-hmm. So I think the 90s were two different beasts to us. But that's cool. That's awesome.
Okay, very good. So why don't we do our rundown, and then we can stick a fork in this bitch.
All right, sounds good. I couldn't talk about the 90s without putting this at my number 10, and it's more there because this movie has just a real soft spot in my heart. It's Rocketeer.
Yeah.
Love that movie. So my number 9 would be The Usual Suspects. My number 8 is The Hunt for Red October. My number 7 is Saving Private Ryan. Number 6 was Jurassic Park. Number 5, Pulp Fiction. Number 4, Shawshank Redemption. Number 3, Unforgiven. Number 2, L.A. Confidential. And my number 1 movie was Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Very good. My number 10, like I said earlier, is L.A. Confidential. My number 9, when I was talking The Lion King, I was lamenting the loss of Disney. We did lose Disney, but we also gained Pixar. So I had to go with, Toy Story, the original Toy Story for my number 9. My number 8 is a movie that I'm surprised, I'm not surprised it didn't show up on your list, but just kind of. The Insider, Michael Mann.
Mm-hmm.
Like we love to say, the movie that Russell Crowe should have won his Oscar for. Then we get into The Shawshank Redemption. Wonderful movie. probably a little bit low on my list, but, you know, I had a hard time ordering this list because these are all wonderful movies. Then the list I just talked about, Unforgiven, Fight Club, Saving Private Ryan, The Big Lebowski, The Lion King, and my number one favorite movie of the 1990s was Pulp Fiction.
Nice.
Yep, yep, yep. So, yeah, once again, look what happens when we do a show and we are awake.
I know, it's amazing.
So next week, I'm not exactly sure what's going on. I do know that I did talk to Jessie to see if she wanted to do the science show this Wednesday, and it turned out that she's sick and has pneumonia or some shit like that. So she couldn't do it last week's, but she might be able to do it week after that. Otherwise, we might be doing the 1980s. We might be doing Ruth Oz. I think we decided to put off Hitchcock until Hitchcock comes, the Hitchcock movie comes out.
Until that gets closer, yeah.
Yeah, which makes actually a lot of sense being topical and all. So, do you have anything else to add before we stick a fork in this, Ethan?
Nope, I think we're good to go.
Okay, okay. Well, I decided to pick some special outro music since we are talking about the 1990s. But until next week, I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
I got nothing.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
There you go.
I got nothing. Here, listen to this shit.
Oh, we'll be back.